Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, after a long, long weekend.
Yeah.
How's it going, man?
Well, it is certainly going. I am finally back home. Got in a little bit earlier today as we record. A little later on a Monday afternoon, Monday night, whatever the appropriate time description would be at this point. It's 7, whatever. But no, it was a chilly weekend. It was a cool weekend. Nice to reconnect with some folks. Nice to meet some of the people that I've been reading or listening to. Finally put some faces and voices to names. So that was kind of a cool experience. We will talk about the actual All-Star festivities a little bit later in the show, but long weekend. Glad to be back home. How are you, sir? Had a birthday over the weekend. Got to watch some basketball. Got to watch some wrestling. How are things?
I'm good. I'm in shambles, but I'm good.
You're Roman got you, huh?
Yeah, man. Man was talking to that man's wife crazy multiple times.
A genuine,
Jay came out, handed the man the chair. Man, no, it was I was a mess, but it was good. Watching All Star Saturday, and that was just a lot for my brain. It was kind of cool to like turn my brain off for the weekend. It appears not enough people did that because there's some takes flying.
Yeah, it's we might need games back already. Huh?
You got to fill me in because I just scrolled. I swiped up.
Okay, so
all right, look, man, I saw in back-to-back player who won't be named is terrible, and LeBron destroyed the dunk contest. That was in a 20-second span, and that was the end of my online viewing for the day.
I can't say that I blame you. We will discuss both of those things in earnest on this show. We'll get into some news items first. On the W side, Stephanie Talbot was with the Seattle Storm last season, signed with the Sparks. She has suffered a torn ACL. She will be out for the season. So the Sparks will not be getting her blend of shooting and secondary creation, which stinks. I hope Stephanie's okay. The Phoenix Mercury making a little bit of news, officially re-signing Diana Taurasi to a 2-year deal, and also re-signing Brittany Griner to a 1-year deal. And so they are very much getting the crew back together, trying to ramp up for a run this season. On the NBA front, some free agency news. Kevin Love, as we discussed on the last show, secured a buyout from the Cleveland Cavaliers. He will be signing with the Miami Heat along with Cody Zeller, which is not a name that many people anticipated that the Heat were in on, much less interested in signing, but he will be adding some depth to the front court. How did you feel about those moves?
Well, the Kevin Love to Miami just made too much sense to not do it. To be able to add his size, his shooting ability, another veteran in that locker room. It's one of those things where there may be question marks as far as what it looks like defensively, but there have been question marks with what it looks like defensively with bigs in Miami before, so I'm sure they'll figure it out. They always had the zone in the back pocket. I'm interested to see how much he plays with Bam, if that's something that Miami tries to go to, but being able to slide him in to hypothetically the backup 5 minutes is a plus. So I like that. The Cody Zeller part kind of threw me for a loop. I didn't necessarily see that being the move, but gives effort, plays defense, screens and rolls, can hand off. Makes sense in Miami.
Fits with the offense indeed. On the Kevin Love front, before I give my thoughts, you mentioned him being able to lock some of those backup 5 minutes and kind of being curious on how the Heat will play, how often the Heat will play him and Bam together. Would you start Kevin Love at the four, or would you continue with the Bam, Cody Martin, Caleb Martin front court?
I think I stick with the Bam, Caleb Martin front court for now, especially if you just want to ease Kevin Love back in. I think it's more so, can you close with Kevin Love if you need to? Can you get the defense to a place where you feel comfortable with that? Now you have Bam, Butler, and Kevin Love, plus insert two guards. and see if that's maybe a look you can throw at teams. I'm interested to see what does Love open up for them in pick and roll. Like, Bam has mastered the in-between shot, but a lot of his actions end up being switches. Does Kevin Love give them a different dynamic with A, the ability to pop, B, the ability to space, and C, the ability to punish some of those switches with post-ups? So I'm intrigued by where they could go with it. Where are you at with the defense?
The defense.
I feel like it would be inappropriate if I didn't ask you, because I checked his age. So
I see. We are going back to season one of the Dunker Spots, going back to the original bits. On the Love front, effort definitely not an issue for Kevin Love defensively. There is a level of, I guess there are question marks about him just in space. The Heat with their backup fives have shown a willingness to put them at the level or a little bit higher. They did so with Dwayne Dedman with results. They did so with Orlando Robinson. I would imagine they would do that with Kevin Love, whether he's the backup five or if he's alongside Bam. I think we'll just see. You get to the level, if he's playing with the starting unit, Bam's on the back end, Jimmy Butler is just rating the pounds in the passing lanes. And I think that kind of infrastructure, it will give a similar vibe to, hey, if I get beat, I got Jared Allen behind me. Or, hey, if I get beat, I got Evan Mobley behind me. Didn't see many minutes with all three of those guys together. But I think Kevin Love can be a little bit insulated with this group. And so I worry a little bit less about the defense in that regard, at least when he's with the starting unit. When he's with the bench, that's where it's like, okay, what does this look like? Who else is on the floor with him? Because I think Victor Oladipo can give you a little bit of that in terms of playing the passing lanes or just kind of pouncing would help if they're going to play him higher up. But I'm kind of I'm wondering what – I just want to see what the lineups are going to be.
No, I hear you. You bring up a good point because Miami is not afraid to turn the Heat up and show. And so there's a world where you can put Kevin Love into a, hey, you just do your job category, which can usually, you know, as long as he stays out of the liability zone, you're good. How do you think it speaks and how do you feel about Miami saying, we're good in the guard room, we just need to get everyone back?
That's the part that intrigued me more so than like Cody's.
Know your personnel, baby. And I asked this so he did not go for the 19th straight pod on a Udonis Haslam rant. So look at me. Pulling the curtain back, baby.
It'd be the third roster spot. But I will say, like, that intrigued me. Because once you saw the Kevin Love rumors kind of circling, it's like, all right, what's going to happen with this last roster spot? Are they just going to convert Orlando Robinson and that kind of completes your big man room? Do they get a guard? They were linked to Russell Westbrook. John Wall, I think, works out or lives in Miami. Like, what do you do there? Patrick Beverly was very briefly a Heatle before getting waived and not making the roster. And then he had the career that he's gone on to have. Like, what do they do there? And so with them going with Zeller, that shows a level of confidence in what Gabe Vincent has been able to do first and foremost in the way he's been able to fill in as a pull-up shooter, as a guy that can get scoring bunches for them and can hold up defensively as well. It also speaks to their faith in Kyle Lowry coming back. And on that front, it was interesting to me, Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald does great work down there. He was kind of relaying the conversation between Kyle Lowry and the organization. And one thing that stood out to me was, I think it was a piece of the tweet where he says, Kyle Lowry's willing to play whatever role they need him to. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. I wonder if that means Gabe Vincent has done enough to secure this starting spot. Or at the very least, does this just mean 30-minute per game Kyle Lowry in Miami is done? Even if he does start, it's going to be more of a split in terms of minutes. And we may see him close, we may not see him close. That portion really caught my eye, and I'm curious to see how that plays out. I think he's still a little bit ways away dealing with the knee soreness. So I don't think we see him immediately after the All-Star break. I think the report from Barry was that he should be back by the end of the month, early March. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, in theory, the guard room should have Kyle Lowry and Gabe Vincent and Max Strus and Tyler Hero and Victor Oladipo. In theory, that should be good enough if everyone is healthy and they are performing. So I understand the Heat saying we have enough in the room for healthy. And even with, you know, Russell Westbrook and John Wall and less so Patrick Beverley in this case, but with Russ and Wall in particular being free agents at the time, I can understand how they view those cases, say, hey, we could use the extra rim pressure. We could use the extra playmaking, especially in light of you know, Gabe has improved as a playmaker, but that's not his game. And with Kyle Lowry, the playmaking is there. It's just, okay, does he get to the rim? Does he force defenses into rotation enough? In theory, Russ can do that, and John Wall has been able to do it in spurts. I guess the shooting kind of outweighed that. Like, all right, let's just not go down that road, and let's just trust our guard room. And so we will see how that plays out. It feels like a solid bet, though. On the love front, like we talked a little bit about the defense. Offensively, his ability to be used as a hub is going to be very important. And that's really going to stand out in the non-Bam minutes. And I also think if Cody Zeller really just proves to be healthy, like I think he's going to give them some good minutes. If it does turn into Kevin Love's going to start with Bam, transition Caleb Martin to the bench, and he still plays high minutes, that's going to open up some backup 5 minutes again. I think Zeller can fill those roles. Like, I really think he can operate as a handoff hub. I think the screening and the rolling is going to be very important, and he rolls with juice, even at this stage. I think he can really slide into what Miami wants to run offensively. I think he can make life easier on those guards that they're relying on to kind of bounce back and in order to make this push in the second half of the season. So I'm intrigued. On the Clipper front, you know, speaking of Russell Westbrook, he is indeed joining the Los Angeles Clippers, which sent my timeline into a tailspin. I'm not sure about yours.
I feel safe enough saying the timeline.
Yeah.
The Russell Westbrook discourse is at an all-time low. Can we talk about that?
Yes, we can.
Like, the discourse is going to be the discourse. If you feel, you know, he can still contribute, if you feel he's aging and struggling to make the transition, whatever it is, why does it have to always be this? And why is it so consistent? Like, I don't even know where we're at in the tennis match. Because I swear it was, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? It was Russell Westbrook, sixth man of the year candidate. And now this is the worst move ever. And I'm like, how did we get to either of these places in this short amount of time? Like, can we, I don't get it.
It's just a lot. It's just a lot. And, you know, even just to bounce off of your point for really digging in, like, I have not had Russ as a top. Well, he hasn't been in my top two or three for sixth man of the year, despite the numbers. Like, I've had other guys I feel that have been better on both ends or just more impactful for their team. So fine. But there's a spectrum between Russ in the sixth man of the year conversation and Russ just cannot contribute to winning basketball at all. Like, I feel like there is a middle ground with Russ. And for me, I guess as we dig into it, I feel like this Clippers situation is probably the best possible context between personnel that can help accentuate what he does well and he wants to be on a good team. Like, this feels like the blend for it to work for Russ, if it's going to work. I will say, I tweeted earlier, I don't feel like I'm in the Iverson zone with Russ. Like, I feel like that discourse is too far. I will say, I think it's fair that if we do get to this Clipper stint, we get to the playoffs, bad things happen, whatever. If it doesn't work for Russ in this situation, I do kind of worry, okay, where does it work? But I also just want to see this play out.
No, I would love for us to see it first. I feel like it's Russ plus Russ is going to start right away, which I don't even think that's true. I'm sure he'll be integrated in. But the mixture has just been wild. Like, what does it hurt? Like, you get Russell Westbrook on the low. You don't need him to be good for this team to work. Like, you didn't get him for the max contract. This is not Washington hoping this works out. It's not the Lakers hoping we can extend things out. This is the Clippers, a pretty good team, saying, hey, why not?
Hey, I get it.
They rolled the dice on John Wall.
And they traded him to Houston when it didn't work. So it's just
it's a veteran's minimum. So when I looked at it and said Westbrook's willingness to fit into a clear and specific role with the Clippers built around his playmaking, rebounding, and toughness, sources said. Willingness, specific role, playmaking. So the conversation's been had. I don't know if the Clippers, having made all those moves to add all those guards, are just going to be like, hey, just come on down without saying, hey, this is what we need from you. And I don't think Russ would put himself in a position. going into next season where it's like, eh, I don't know if I could thrive. It seems like a win-win there. Those are my initial thoughts. I got more, though.
Oh, well, actually, I'll concede the floor to you if you want to get I have a whole spiel. But
You got a whole spiel. This man's going to go. Well, my thing is my mind goes to the usage for him offensively. I think in theory he should boost them in transition, which has not been a massive thing for the Clippers. So if he can get out and go. Now, what happens after? Anyone guess sometimes, but having someone with that skill set should help your team. And that's like the one thing, like I go back to the Bones Highland part where I was like, I like Bones for the Clippers. And I saw Bones with the Clippers. And I was like, oh, that's right. They don't have someone who can drive like that. So it looks different. So will Russ be able to get those paint touches? Will he be able to hit that turbo button? Can he help that team in that department? Because the Clippers are pretty good once they get you in rotation. The issue half the time is getting a team in rotation. So if he can get those drives working, that's going to help this specific team. But I guess, you know, I got to see it. Like, are we going to see self-creation? Are we going to see post-ups? Where is he going to be used? How is he going to be used? When is he going to be used? Like, will we see him cutting if he's spaced on the weak side? Where is he going to be spaced at? We've seen him use as a screener before. We've seen the Clippers have smaller guards screen for Kawhi. Do the Clippers use him as a screener and a roller? What does that look like? Does the team putting a center on Russell Westbrook now open him up to be a screen and roller, which is something that they've struggled with smaller lineups and those kind of things? So that's where my mind is like, there's possibilities. But yeah, if it's X, Y, and Z, I could see how it may not work. You know, if it's just going to be the pull-up show, how big of a lifespan does that have for this team? How much does it help? What value does it give? And I just want to see the combos. You know what I mean? Like the Clippers have done a lot of Bones, Eric Gordon, and Norman Powell together at the same time. Is Russ taking Bones minutes to start? Are we getting a four-guard lineup?
Oh, boy.
Does he boost their smaller lineups? I just look at you. is it Russ and PG reunited off the bench? Like, how does this math start mathing? Like, and I feel it's funny because Ty Lue had the wing problem, figured it out, and now he's got a bunch of guards he's got to play. But it feels like the Clippers are like, no, we need to get this guard play right. Like, we got all these wings. Now we got two bigs, so we can stay big. We can go small if we want to. But now we need these guards right. Mm-hmm. So at least two or three of y'all going to figure this out. I don't know if it's Norm, Eric Gordon, Russ, Bones. Somebody's going to elevate.
Yeah.
We're going to have the team we need. It's a small sample size, but, you know, it feels like the Clippers like Eric Gordon closing with that lineup. So I'll keep an eye on that. But that's where I'm at initially. Where are you at? I know you got a whole spiel. Let me hold on. Get some water.
Smash, you got to get some popcorn water ready. Oh, Lord. Not the popcorn. Okay. I guess for me, I struggle with writing off Russ to the Clippers off rip. And I say this while completely understanding where the angst lies with Russ. For as important as his rim pressure is and can be, he hasn't had a great season finishing at the rim, particularly in the half court. I think that's fair. As important, as impressive as his playmaking can be, particularly the interior passing, which I do think we saw it some with Russ and Anthony Davis with those lower angled pick and rolls. Zubac is not Anthony Davis naturally, but he is a really good screener, can finish at the basket. So I do think that connection may be a little bit better than people may be anticipating off rip. But even with that, Russ does have his spurts of weird decision-making. We can frame it that way. And so I can understand the angst behind, hey, when Russ has the ball, what exactly is he going to do with it? And if Russ has the ball, period, that means Paul George does it. That means Kawhi Leonard does it. And so we are really relying on him to maximize the possessions that he gets. And then naturally, there's the off-ball issue with the three-point shot is not good. We know this. Had two straight years of high percent shooting north of 40% on corner threes alone on low volume. This year has gone back in the tank. The shooting is going to be an issue. And off the ball, you hit on a lot of the possibilities of what it can look like. Him cutting from the corner, him cutting from the slot, him being used as a screener. in terms of the frequency of Russ doing any of those things across multiple stops, that's been spotty. So I do understand Clipper fans, Clipper media being like, hey, this is the sample that we have. I would like to believe, but this is the sample that we're working with. And so I get it. And I think to your point, Steve, about Ty Lue now having to figure out the lineups and figure out which guards to play in, et cetera. A common criticism that I have read, have heard from the Clipper people that I trust, is that Ty Lue has not done the best job of toggling lineups this year. I think part of that is not knowing who he has available on any given night. But even in my viewings, I can also see where, hey, this is a lineup that was out there a little bit too long. This is an interesting combination here. What's happening here? For me, and maybe it's because I'm not as close to it as Clipper fans are or Clipper media is, I've seen the Ty Lue tinkering show, and then he figures it out in the second half of the year or figures it out in the playoff series. And so I have a level of faith in him sorting out what the right combinations are going to be, even in spite of this season maybe not being his best. And the point you hit on with the guard screens, and the Clippers doing that pretty frequently for their star wings, I think is an apt one. I think, you know, to bounce off my general context point, if there is a place where Russ will be consistently used as a screener more often than he ever has been, I think the Clippers will represent that. That's a very effective way that they get their stars going. And for Russ, if he can commit to doing that, that is a way for him to create easier opportunities for himself and alleviate some of the we're putting our center on him, or we're just ignoring him in the half court. And even to the minutes thing, I think he just takes the Bones minutes as they get him in early. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure about the starting thing. Like, I've seen he expects to start, but it won't be immediately. It'll be a work in progress type thing. I would imagine he gets the Bones minutes. You know, judging off the last game they played against Milwaukee, I think Bones got 16 minutes in that game. You give that to Russ. If you shave like 5 or 6 minutes from Terrence Mann, which Clipper fans don't want to hear. Like, I checked today, he's averaging 28 minutes per game in his starts this season. I think he played 35 in the Bucks game. You shave four off of that, he's still around 30. You get that to Russ, that's 20 minutes for Russ. And then you can kind of pick and choose from elsewhere. And depending on what the lineups are, if they go three guard or whatever, like, you can get the 20 to 24 minutes without eliminating Terrence Mann, if that's the biggest concern. Because I do think, as you look at the Clippers' best lineups and the guys that just buy it best with their stars, if Eric Gordon is knocking down shots in addition to the rim pressure, in addition to the defense that's now perked up since he's out of Houston, like, I would choose Eric Gordon as a closing option over Russ. I would choose Terrence Mann as a closing option over Russ based on the shooting, the connect, the playmaking, and the more consistent defense. And so as long as the conversation's been had, like, I don't see it being Russ is playing 32 minutes a night and he is closing no matter what. I could be proven wrong on that. And again, Clipper people, especially the Clipper people that I trust, like, they watch this team and they know the patterns and know how Lue's been. They have a better handle on that than I do. And so if it does turn into that, then they will just say, hey, we tried to tell you, and I will hold my L and say, you know what, you were right. But right now, like, I don't see it being Russ and Penn, he is starting. He is playing high minutes. He is going to have OKC level usage. He is going to close games. He is going to be a late game decision maker. I feel like the beauty of this Clippers team, and in turn can be a little bit frustrating for Ty Lue to try to figure out, is that they're super deep. They don't have to close with Russ. If Eric Gordon doesn't have it going, they don't have to close with Eric Gordon. If Terrence Mann is having a game where the shot isn't falling, e.g. or Russ or both are playing better, they don't have to close with Terrence Mann. I think the depth is a bit of a buffer against the Russ thing, honestly. And so you combine that with the skill set that he brings. He is someone, as you mentioned, can get it going in transition. He's going to help their defensive rebounding. And the defensive rebound is already good. I think they're fourth in defensive rebound rate right now. Russ is going to turn those into transition opportunities. The Clippers are 12th in transition frequency per clean the glass. They're 12th in transition frequency coming off of defensive rebounds. Russ can juice both of those numbers and get them easier looks. And if he's able to do that, that alleviates some of the half-court concerns that you may have with him. You don't have to worry about where he's spaced or how often he's screening or if the pull-up is going or if he's throwing a pass at someone's ankle. if you're not in the half court to begin with. Russ can help jumpstart a lot of things. And just to zoom out with the context overall, like, this is a lot of spacing for Russ. And to say nothing about, like, who's better between LeBron and Anthony Davis versus Kawhi and PG, just in terms of what the skill sets are, I think it'll be a lot easier for Russ to play off of Kawhi and Paul George based on the shooting and based on the areas of the floor they like to operate and the type of scores that they are. They're more pull-up guys versus LeBron wants to get downhill. He wants to operate in the post, draw two and go. Anthony Davis wants to operate in the mid-post, jab and J or jab and drive. I think they're going to operate in different enough ways and in different enough spots to where Russ may not be in the way as often as people may anticipate. And so all of that together, I kind of lean, this is a solid flyer for the Clippers. I understand why it may not work. But as of, you know, 7:22 Eastern on February 20th, like, I'm probably like 60-40 that this goes well for the Clippers.
And again, to your point, it's low risk. You have something already built. So you can always go back to that if that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you talked about the spacing, because I was going to ask you, how do you think that factors in? If you're going from the Clippers having two guards in Reggie and John Wall that didn't quite have the same amount of paint touches, and now their shots became, oh, wait, I can't get in the paint right now.
Mm-hmm.
Does Russ's ability to get into the paint help? Like, what does that look like? What attention does that draw from defenses? Where is he able to attack from? Who are they helping off of? Because if he can get to drive and kick and drive closeouts, I think that's going to enhance things. And he's probably in a better spot to do so. But again, you know, I guess my thing is, what's the big concern? He's going to turn over and take bad shots?
Yeah, like, I think just the decision-making for Russ is going to be your issue. And I think that's fair. Like, we've seen, we have seen the Russell Westbrook show, for better and for worse. So I completely, that's a valid concern.
I guess my thing is, it's like, how many scenarios is he going to be put in? Like, I don't know if he's going to initiate every set. Like, is it just the transition decision-making, the half court after drive? Like, because it feels like, okay, we have Kawhi, we have PG. A lot of these sets are based around them. Do other things. But that's kind of been there. We just need this type of player in this lineup with them. Either we need the defense of Terrence Mann, give me the scoring of Norman Powell with the shooting, Eric Gordon shooting with some playmaking, Russ give us some drives. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like they're just mixing and matching what may work. So
yeah,
it just feels like a different context for me. And I at least want to see what the attempt is before I can sit here and be like, oh, this is a terrible idea. Because he was just coming in, if he's coming off the bench, hitting the turbo button, getting drives, playing well, now he closes, then what are we talking about? But if he's not, he probably won't close. They got too many options.
Yeah.
This isn't the spot where we have to play you. Yeah, we'd like to play for you. We want this to work. But if it doesn't, we just go right here.
Yeah. Like, the Clippers have acquired Russell Westbrook because he was traded and waived. Like, this is not, we sent out Luke Kennard, Robert Covington, insert salary matching here. We have given up pieces of our rotation that we like to make this work. Russ is an additive in this situation. For the first time, because obviously he's been traded to Washington, traded to Houston, traded to Lake. Like, this is the first time he's been added. It's just, he is an additive. He is extra here. The Wizards needed him and Brad Beal to work. The Rockets needed him and James Harden to work. The Lakers needed him to be a secondary playmaker, take some pressure, take some on-ball reps off of LeBron. Him and AD manned a second unit so the LeBron-less minutes aren't an utter disaster like they have been. They needed him. The Clippers don't need Russell Westbrook. And I guess that's why, again, I say this as someone who's not, you know, a Clipper fan, Clipper media. I guess that's why it's easier for me to say, okay, this is what they're going for. This is how it can work. This is how it may not work. I think it's a fine flyer. If it doesn't work, it's not going to hurt. I will say, in terms of, like, lineup mixing and matching, like, I think there's general angst around, okay, what happens to Terrence Mann? He's been really good. He fits really well with their stars. He doesn't deserve to get demoted in any real way. Beyond that, I do think Russ and Zubac playing together, I think there's, I talked about it a little bit earlier, Like, you saw, like, those inside the arc pick and rolls between Russ and AD. I think him and Zubac can have similar success on that. But I do wonder, I do worry a little bit from a spacing perspective, having both of them on the floor together. So I do wonder how often Ty Lue's going to play those two together. And I think, depending on who they're playing, that's also going to affect how often Russ can close. Because I was kind of cycling through this earlier. I was like, okay, if they're playing the Nuggets, first round, second round, whichever way you want to put them, whatever, like, they're going to need Zubac for Jokic. And in that case, I think the hierarchy is going to be Terrence Mann, Eric Gordon, then Russ among those three in terms of closing, unless Russ just has it going. It has been incredible. And so, like, I do think that's going to be something. So I worry more about how you parse those minutes out and giving Russ, like, a true roller. But even with that, like, the addition of Mason Plumlee alleviates my concern in that regard. So even if you feel like you can't play him and Zubac together, him and May should be able to be fine against second unit. So I just find myself less concerned about it. I think is where I ultimately land. And I just want to see it happen. Again, we get a six-game sample and the Clippers are blitzed in Russ's minutes. And it's like, okay, well, this is what everyone was concerned about. Y'all got it. Ty Lue, I would imagine, would say, okay, let's dwindle this down from 24 minutes to 18 minutes and go from there. And then cool. But I don't know, man. There's more spacing. The stars he's going to be next to whenever he's next to them makes more sense. This feels like the spot for it to work if it's going to work. And I think we can have more of the what is Russ's place conversation if it doesn't work here. Because this really feels like a good context for him. And if it's not here, I don't know where it goes from here. So though, that concludes my Russell Westbrook thoughts. Did you have anything else on Russ?
I kind of want to see what it looks like when he's hyped and Kawhi is Kawhi. Just a funny dynamic.
The fun guy and let's just have some fun out there. Like, mm-hmm. It's going to be a... Oh, man. That's gonna be a fun vibe. Can I be respectfully messy just for a moment?
1,000.
I will say, and maybe this is also why I'm less concerned about it. I will say, it immediately hit with an uh-oh.
I will say it's definitely some heat behind it. Oh. I'm ready.
No heat, but no. Like, there was a lot of betting to this Russ signing, just in general. Because you think of some of the buyout moves. It's like, all right, Terrence Ross, you out of here. You're going to Dallas. Wait, you're going to Phoenix. That was cool. We got the Kevin Love news. Like, 2 days later, he is a Heat. Like, all right, that's cool. With Russ, it was Paul George really wants him. Lawrence Frank gives a very, hey, I don't know if we need a point guard or not, but we need a player that does not sound like Russell Westbrook at all. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. You go to Miami and it's Barry Jackson again. It's like, hey, the Heat are going, they're doing their due diligence. They're talking to people that have relationships with Russ, et cetera. The front office is split. And I was like, huh, well, okay. The Chicago thing, there was smoke and then there wasn't smoke. And I was like, all right, well, it's just interesting, like, he's the highest profile guy on the list, but also everyone was kind of like, are we sure about this? And so it's funny on one hand, but on the other hand, it's like, okay, if the Clippers did this kind of betting, and apparently it's told Lawrence Frank, I hear you, but also there has to be a level of confidence, sans Lawrence Frank, that they can figure out how to make this work. So I just found the whole thing intriguing.
I can't wait to see it because I just don't know if it's going to be what everyone thinks it's going to be from the start. Where the ball tips and now Russ comes and takes a two dribble pull up on the first possession and then does that every single time down. I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Oh, man. Russ hops in with takeover already. Like, oh, no. Well, I don't know, man. Like, I even made the tweet as I was kind of talking through it on the timeline. I was like, you know, like, I may just be naive in some of these thoughts. And, like, I may just be wrong, and that's okay. But this seems fine, man. it seems fine. Like, this seems like the spot for it to be okay. Speaking of former Laker guards that were no longer wanted by the Lakers, the Bulls have signed Patrick Beverley earlier today, per I think Adrian Wojnarowski was the first one to get to that one, averaging 6 points, three boards, shade under three assists in 27 minutes, going back home to Chicago. So I think that's pretty cool for Pat Bev. Is he going to be the energy injection that the Bulls need?
They hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, look, man, you said they had to do something. They did something. So this is either going to go one of two ways. He's going to give him a boost and a lift, or he's just going to start some more fires. Not even on his own regard. But if you put a fiery, energetic person in an already questionable space, as we've seen reports throughout the year, could go one of two ways.
We gonna get some answers. I am convinced that someone will be annoyed by the end of this signing. It may be the other team. It may be Zach LaVine. It may be Billy Donovan. Someone's gonna be irritated. Pat Bev is gonna come in there. He's gonna play really hard. He is gonna be feisty at the point of attack. Hopefully he gets back to knocking down threes at a high level instead of like a moderate one, 35% from three this season. But I do think, outside looking in, very cliche thing to say, so my apologies, but like, it did feel like they needed a little bit of just some juice, some feistiness that just hasn't really permeated throughout the roster as of late. Like, Caruso can only do so much. Javonte Green has wished, I think everyone in Chicago wished they got more Javonte Green this season. Like, it just hasn't hit. It just has felt like a little bit of a malaise in Chicago, which is odd considering that the defense has still been good this year. But
no, give me some Patrick Beverley, Alex Caruso minutes. Let me see what that looks like. Let me just see defensive havoc.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's not going to be fun for opposing ball handlers, I'll tell you that much. But
no, it shouldn't be, but it's going to be interesting. Now, can I be respectfully messy?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, if I'm Kobe White, I'm like, hey, man.
what more do you want from me?
Hey, we got the same stats, man.
Y'all been telling me here since I've been here, we need more on defense. I finally get to okay on defense, and you bring in Pat Bev. Also,
what do you think Goron thinking right
now? That's what I was about to get to. Goron absolutely hitting the back channels like, hey, you sure you don't want to wave Yurt? I can come back. Y'all got Zeller, y'all got Bam, y'all got Kayla, like Orlando still. Y'all don't need another center, do you? Like, we can, hey. I know y'all want another guard.
Man, looking at Dallas' minutes, I think I could play some backup one.
Jaden Hardy's still on the rotate. Hold on, he cool and all. That's Luka right now. Well, what you mean? But no,
I mean, does it move the needle at all for you with them? Are you intrigued by a Beverley, Caruso, LaVine, DeMar, Vucevic lineup? Or is this just the Bulls with energy?
It's very, very much Red Bull adjacent.
Gotcha.
We'll see. Again, like, the defense has not been the problem this year. It's the offense, and like, we'll see how much Patrick Beverley helps with that. I will say, the Bulls have oddly been like a low drive team this year in terms of volume, which you wouldn't think on the surface with LaVine and DeRozan and Io and even Caruso, though that's more of like a connecting way than him looking to finish for his own. Patrick Beverley will do that at the very least. He will get downhill and at least attempt to kind of kick off the chain of some driver kick stuff. So I think just the general energy and speed that he plays with, I think, can be helpful. I don't know if this turns the Bull from play into, hey, they're fighting for six now. Like, I don't know if I want to attribute that much or put that much pressure on Patrick Beverley to make that kind of turnaround. Ultimately, this is still going to be a team that's driven by what DeMar does, what Zach does, what Vooch does. But I do think he can bring some toughness to that locker room, bring some juice that has been needed. Last signing, I guess we can report right now, the Bucks picking up Myers Leonard on a 10-day contract. Only a 10-day contract, but this is interesting. One, Myers Leonard has not played in 2 years, but the reason that he has not been leaked for 2 years was because he was suspended, fined, traded, then waived, and then it has also dealt with like a health thing. But mostly that all came from him using an anti-Semitic slur during a Twitch stream. I think he was playing Call of Duty. Myers did come out and immediately apologize. He's done work with the Jewish community. So I'm just curious to see what the, I guess, what the reaction from the Bucks fan base will be. Like, I just saw the notification. I haven't been on Twitter to see that portion of it, to see how that move has been received. What are your early thoughts on the Myers signing?
I mean, he's been out for 2 years. You would hope during that time he's able to reflect and improve and put the work in to do better. Number one, as far as Encore goes, I wonder if this is just trying to build a bridge until Bobby Portis is able to come back. Just mm-hmm. have another large human being. See if maybe they can get another big in there. To have another option at the five, but you know, that's pretty much where I am with it.
That's fair.
You,
it's odd. I don't want to say odd. Odd's not the right word. I will just say again, I wonder what the backlash is. And like by, I guess, multiple accounts, like work has been put in. There was a recent thing, Outside the Lines feature with Myers Leonard and Jeremy Schapp kind of talking through what happened and the work that he's done. It's not for me to say, hey, this is enough. He should be forgiven. That's not my call to make, and that's not a call that I'm going to make. I have to kind of lean on the Bucks making this signing means that they feel good about the work that's been done and believe that Myers has reflected, has improved, has again made those steps to be better. And even with that being the case, that doesn't preclude the fan base from being like, hey, no, that's not cool. This isn't the type of individual that we want around the organization, even if it is just a 10-day contract. No. And so, like, just to bounce off of you, like, I do hope that that change and improvement has been made for everyone's sake. And as for the on-court product, like, I do... It's just the element of him being 7 foot tall and being able to knock down threes and not just spot up from the corner, but can genuinely knock down some blood break stuff. Like going back to the Miami years before all of that happened, like he was the starting center for them during their finals run, or most of that season during the finals run in the bubble, because of what he could do as a shooter, as someone that was comfortable flowing in the handoffs and opening up the floor that way and being solid enough defensively. Just kind of using the size at the rim. They didn't really play him high up super often. And that vibes with what Milwaukee wants to do scheme-wise. So, like, I can at least see the basketball fit. I also think that says a lot about where Milwaukee is with, like, Mamu in particular. Because I think in an ideal world, you just kind of let him soak up those reps and let him keep playing until Bobby Portis is back. If they're bringing in Myers to try him out and see where he is, I think that says, okay, maybe the trust just isn't there on one or both ends of the floor.
Mamu feels like he's in the Nora zone to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, this is great. Either you got to do this really, really, really well, or this has to be better.
And you've been all right. So I don't know if that's going to be enough for us as we are in this battle with Boston for the top seed in the East. We're still waiting to hear how long Giannis is going to be out. A tweet I just saw on my phone. He was getting the MRI on his wrist, apparently not too much worry about it being a long-term thing, per Shams. He said that Milwaukee Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo avoided serious damage in his right wrist after further testing today. Antetokounmpo could miss some games, but an overall sigh of relief for the Bucks and their all-NBA star. So, may not be a long-term thing, so that's going to be cool, but just trying to get some reliable bodies in the lineup for Milwaukee, I guess is the call. And if they don't feel like that can be Mamu, I understand they're looking for other options. This one is an interesting one. So again, we'll see what the actual blowback is. And as far as the on-court product goes, we'll see if the shots are made when he gets on the floor. So that is all I have on that front. Steve, would you like to talk some All-Star stuff?
Let's do it, man. Tell me all about the sights, the sounds, the scenes of a serene Salt Lake City.
When we played in that cold weather, we was cold.
Please, Nakaris, please tell me you weren't out there just with a t-shirt.
Come on now. No, I was not out there with just a t-shirt.
All right.
But it was a cool experience. It is very scenic, I will say. But that feels secondary to what the on-court product was throughout the weekend. We can start with the...
Where do you want to start? Side note, just a quick hat tip. A salute to the Celebrity Game for thoroughly entertaining me.
The Celebrity Game was so fun, man.
So salute to them for knocking it out the park. Where else are you going to see Thanasis with his chest out drawing up plays while Giannis and Lindsey Vonn look on? Shout out to Lindsey Vonn. But what like the Miz hit a half quarter, almost won it. Richard Jefferson was reffing and dunking and commentating.
Richard Jefferson started the game in a suit and then was in a ref uniform and then was in a basketball uniform. And I was like, wait a minute. I bet he's like room temperature because like it's cold. But incredible presentation for Richard Jefferson. Like, give that man the game ball for being, I guess, every man in this case. Can't go with the every woman joke, but like, He was all over the place. So shout out to Richard Jefferson. Shout out to DK Metcalf, who was dunking all over the place. You got it. Dunked and displayed his athleticism to the point to where the NFL is randomly drug testing him. So that's neat. Put air quotes around neat. But DK killed it. Calvin Johnson would just be like a top 30 screener in the NBA right now if you plugged him in. I've seen enough. That was some good stuff. I felt bad for Janelle Monae. I tweeted about it.
I didn't. She was the highlight. She was playing defense on offense. I was sold. She was the MVP.
She was all, just a general shout out to Janelle Monae. But beyond that, it was funny because like I got there early, so I was got to see like the shoot around and stuff or whatever.
Janelle, did you talk to Medium Joe?
I did not talk to Medium Joe. I was near people who were talking to Medium Joe, so that was cool. I got to talk to Arike Ogunbowale, got to talk to Diamond the Shields before the game, chopped it up briefly with Monica Minutt and Mark Jones. It was a cool experience. But anyway, as we got to the arena to see the shoot around and stuff, Janelle is taking shots, and they're more like heaves. And I was like, oh, no. This is I am concerned. And I tweeted that I am concerned. And sure enough, I think it was early in the first quarter, Janelle checks in. She's in the dunker spot, which why would you have Janelle Monae in the dunker spot? I don't know. Have Janelle Monae on the dunker spot, but you don't need to have her in the dunker spot. Anyway, gets the shot swatted immediately. It was like, oh, well, that's not ideal. But no, overall, the Celebrity Game was really fun. Rising Stars Challenge was solid. All right.
There you go.
No, it was fun. Shout out Team Pal. Had some good moments in there.
Did you take in the Alvarado show live? Were you able to get there?
I did get there.
I'm pulling the curtain back. You're giving us all access.
Buddy. Yes. I was at the Celebrity Game clipping and stuff. Early fourth quarter. I'm like, all right, let me try to get an Uber. Let's see if we can get to the arena so I can make for Rising Stars. But yeah. Yeah, Jose Alvarado is just cool, man. He's just a cool dude. So one wins it with the shot. But then even Saturday morning, as they do like the media availability for the All-Star team, like he's in there with a microphone asking questions. I was in the scrum with Drew Holiday. He pops up like, hey, besides me, who's the toughest player to guard? And Drew's like, you know, I steal you. I was like, you know what? This is good stuff. Like, this is good stuff. This is fun. Like, he had a microphone. Trey Murphy III was walking around. He was like, hey, excuse me, I have a question. Who do you have winning the dunk contest tonight? It's Trey Murphy. He didn't win the dunk contest. He might have won the weekend for me, though. Like, that, he is, one, he's just a good player. Two, very good dunker. Three, he's just a fun person. like between him being pseudo media during media availability and then the presentation during the dunk contest for him, I'm still like blown by him walking by the judge like, hey, you want a tomahawk or a windmill? And then just doing both. Like, you know what? That's how you do it, young fella. That's how you do it. That is how you sell it. That was fun. But yeah, like Saturday was also fun. Like a 3-point shootout, Dame just doing Dame things. Actually, let me rewind very briefly. Shout out to Steve for just sweeping the predictions for everything. It was amazing. He had Team Jazz for the Skills Challenge, which
sure did.
He had Team Jazz. I had the rookies. Yeah, I was feeling good about the rookies after the first one. I was like, all right, cool. Then got to the passing, and I was like, okay, almost got there. Cool. Got to the freaking shooting competition. Little boys ain't make a shot until like 2 seconds left. I'm just like, excuse me?
Which is funny because you said the Antetokounmpos would be the one struggling with the shooting.
Yeah, and they did. But, well, shout out to Drew for being, Drew Holiday being an honorary Antetokounmpo.
The honorary Antetokounmpo was amazing. I was like, wait a minute. They just call this man?
Yeah, it's like, oh, Drew already gonna be there. I'm just like, wait, that's not, we ain't checking birth certificates. Like, I don't know if that's a,
and he has two brothers of his own.
Yeah, like you could have just had the holidays. I don't. Also, on that front, because you know, I was in the Drew scrum early on Saturday. He was asked, I can't remember which reporter it was that asked, so my apologies early on, but he was asked, like, besides himself, like, who would he like to see win a ring at some point? Listed his younger brother, since he's won one, Justin's won one. So getting Aaron one. I was like, oh, that's wholesome. That's neat. But yeah, I was very disappointed about the rookies. I was like, you know what? This is literally the one that I figured, okay, Jabari's going to knock down shots from the corner. Surely Paolo will catch a rhythm. Like Jaden, he's fine on spot ups. And there's like no defenders, so he should be fine. And they just didn't make anything. And what also frustrated me was like, okay, y'all are still taking threes. Like at least just let's go around the free throw line and get some jump. Let's get the one pointers on the board. Give yourself a chance. Like they just didn't.
This is why I love Nikias, man. You're not only gonna get a breakdown of the celebrity game of the All-Star Trap, you're gonna get the process during the Skills Challenge. And that's why you, sir, are a national treasure.
It just didn't make sense. Like you gotta have it wasn't going for anybody. We got towards the end, Paolo started taking like the free throw line jump. Okay, anyway. Skill competition was what it was. Tyrese Halliburton coming out the gates with darn near 30. I was like, wait a minute. And it's funny because like we talked about on the pod, like I ended up picking Buddy Hield. And I was like, you know what? I'm intrigued by Tyrese in this one because I feel like his shooting form is kind of oddly suited for this, just with his release point and stuff. I wasn't expecting that. And it naturally runs out of gas in the final round. So it was what it was. And it was indeed Dame time, as you said on the pod, verbatim, that it was going to be Dame time. And so it was also funny to, like, I was in arena, so I didn't get to watch the TV broadcast, but going back and hearing, like, Dame time things, like, ah, that tracks, that's cool, that makes sense.
Hey, man, as soon as they told me, well, I already picked him, but as soon as they said he was wearing his college uniform, I was like, ah, yeah, this seems like the one. Like, imagine coming back with a Weber State uniform, but it says Dala on the back. It's like double making it.
Yeah, like you have to win. Also, while we're on the 3-point shootout.
Uh-oh, here we go. Who is it first? Is it Kevin? That man was hurting. Or you got a handle on Randall?
Yes, because as we said on the pod, we were talking about Kevin Herter, and he had the humans acting as small wreck. And I was like, you know what? He cannot come out there and have like 17 or something. And he did worse. Come on, dog. Come on, dog. You can't. Come on. You can't use a human rack and then. Come on. And you a first round out. That's not cool. Julius Randle. God bless him for texting back. That man airballed the corner three. I was like, okay, I don't need to see anything else.
Come on, he put up a respectable number. It wasn't 13? Dead last.
It wasn't dead last, but that says more about Kevin Herter. No. What in the Antoine Walker is this? Also, on the Randle front, shout out to Evan Fournier for his tweet where he was like, hey, if they ask some more time and they let Julius jab and Jay first, he might win. I was like, you know what? That's a tremendous shot. Also, he probably could have used the jab and Jay. Jason Tatum traveling during the competition was like, how do you even do that? If you recall the... It's like, how you literally grab it off the rack and shoot. Like, how do you end up lunging above the break and having to gather yourself? Did the ball slip as you were trying to get the shot up? I didn't understand it. He didn't win. Didn't matter. Shout out to Dame. He beat the Pacers.
Go ahead. How about Tyler Hero? Dog. Just feeling himself in his bag and then realizing, oh, I have 7 seconds to shoot all 5 of these shots. My money balls.
He was just doing shoot around. I was like, brother, are you still hurt? Is that the issue?
That clock said, I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
I was like, dang, dog. I was like, is he still dealing with injury? Because like he missed the last couple regular season games before the All-Star break, with, I think, dealing with the knee, if I'm not mistaken. Knee or foot, one of the two. It was like, it's not serious enough that he won't participate in All-Star Weekend. I was like, huh, that's interesting. Sure, let's roll with it. Let's see what happens. We saw what happens. That, you know, a little disappointing, but it's fine. But no, shout out to Dame. Beat the Pacers. Got it done. Steve was right once again. We get to the dunk contest. It was good.
Huh. You don't say.
Yeah, it was good. If only someone had said that on this very podcast that you could listen to on all podcast streaming platforms.
It's fine. Go ahead. Let the people know, guys.
No. when in doubt, listen to Steve. I guess it's the... 95% of the time, when in doubt, listen to Steve. Yeah. Anyway, dunk contest was fantastic. Really enjoyed the dunks from Jericho Sims. It was just Vince Carter... It was just an ode to Vince Carter, apparently. He starts with a honey dip, gets the arm all the way in there. Like, all right. And then there was a grab the envelope, get the arm in there. There was like a put both your arms in there. I was like, yo, this is a lot. It's also just insane how easily he jumps. Talked a little bit about Trey Murphy III already, so I won't hover too long. But like, man, the tomahawk into the windmill is just some insane stuff. That is some actual like 2K dunk contest stuff. I think that dunk is available. That was a lot of fun. And the presentation for him was tremendous. KJ Martin coming out with the 3D printed, like see-through basketballs. Like, wait, this is a lot, but this is kind of cool. And then there was Matt McClung, who just was operating on an entirely different plane than everyone. He broke out a 540, Steve. He broke out a 540 before he closed with a 540. He opened with jumping over someone, bringing it down, tapping the glass, and then flushing it through. And if I'm not mistaken, that was the first attempt. What the heck did we witness from Matt McClung during this contest?
That man said he was ready, and he was ready.
Yeah.
I don't know what we saw, but it was clean, and he knocked them all out appropriately. That's the key to the dunk contest, honestly. It's just the more they make it on the first try, the more enjoyable it'll be.
Yeah. And it helped because like it wasn't like he was going first. So, like, he just followed someone's good dunks. Like, all right, yeah, bet. Watch this. And then it's whatever the heck he did, and it's another 50. And I was like, well, not much you can do with that. Like that, I was very impressed by all four of the dunkers, man. They really brought it. And I hope that sets a bar for next year.
What were the vibes like in arena when Jericho Sims did that dunk? Because it didn't translate the best on TV.
Mm-hmm.
it seemed very quiet. Is that appropriate to say?
No. It was quiet up until like whoever was on mic was like, let's gotta see the replay, whatever, whatever. And they showed the replay on the Jumbotron, and it was just a very loud collective. Oh, that's what he did. It's like, yeah. Again, very reminiscent to 2000 when Vince Carter did the first, like, the honey dip dunk, got his arm and the elbow. It felt like a very subdued reaction compared to the other dunks he did. And then you got the replay, and it was like, I'm sorry, he did what? And so it was a lot of that for Jericho. I got a little bit of a laugh out of Jericho when he was trying to put both arms in the rim, and you could see him like miss the first time trying to get his arm in there, and he like hurried up and put it in. I was like, oh man, like it's still a 50 to me, but like, yo, you gotta nail that. But also, that's a really hard thing to do. Like, that's the degree of difficulty of that is insane. So like, I didn't want to be too harsh, but I did find it funny as they were showing the slow-mo replays. I was like, ah, yeah, we see the arm coming in there late, but that was cool. That was cool. So I think Saturday closed out well. Then we got Sunday, and can I just be honest?
Before you go honest, can I ask one question?
Yeah, go ahead.
What level or what time did your patience run out with the pregame festivities? Of the video packages and the draft and the intros, at what point did Nakai say, "All right, man"?
Honestly, I was fine, and I think I was fine because I was preoccupied doing like live draft grades. Which
okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So I was doing the whole bit. I will circle back to that very shortly. Do you have All-Star thoughts before I go?
All-Star, oh no, you can just go, man. You are the expert. You are the premier mind of this pod, and you were there. So yeah, go first.
I was about to say, all right, one of those statements are true. I was in the game. Yeah, let's be frank and talk about it, man. It sucked.
Oh wow.
It stunk. It stunk. And I will give quit hat tips to Lauri Markkanen breaking out dunks that I did not know he had in his bag. I will give a hat tip to LeBron James for throwing it off glass to himself. Hat tip to Ja Morant, the 360. Hat tip to Damian Lillard and the half-court heave, though he did low-key travel, but fine. Hat tip to the Jason Tatum versus Jaylen Brown mini battle in the third quarter. That was fun. Dog, I understand that in the All-Star game, at least the recent ones, first three quarters, we just getting buckets. Might wave at a ball handler, might fake like we about to get to the rim, we're going to let you get your dunk off, whatever. I understand that the energy level and the effort level on defense is going to be low, particularly in the first three quarters. And even when you get to the fourth quarter, traditional setup, the Elam ending that we've gone through the last few years, the defense ramps up and it becomes a basketball game. But like even that's like 80, 85%. No reasonable person should be expecting full-blown playoff-level intensity for the All-Star game. The effort level in this game was well below even All-Star standards. And that's where I got annoyed. That's where I get annoyed. You know what the secret sauce to me doing, like, the play breakdowns during the All-Star game is? Like, one, it's fun. Two, it's a way for me to stay engaged because I know that no defense is going to be there. So it's like, all right, where's the fun that I can find here? Because it's going to be like a glorified layup. One, the Wi-Fi just wouldn't cooperate, so I couldn't post clips. But beyond that, it was a disappointment. Not even disappointment too much. It was honestly a disgrace. Which sounds weird for like someone under 30 to say, like a very old man yell at clouds. I don't qualify for my pension yet, I ain't old. But like that was disgraceful what that was. And as I was tweeting through it, it's like, I'm not expecting zone. I'm not expecting full-fledged, like, playoff intensity defense. I think the tweet I had was like, give us, like, 60%. It ain't got to be 5. It was very much 5. That's way too low for even the early portion of the game. And if that's all it's going to be, I don't know who that's for. Because, like, you would think in a vacuum, okay, this is for the youth. They want to see their favorite players. Giannis scored the first bucket. He was done in 20 seconds. LeBron James got his finger caught in the rim going for a chase down block. He was done in the first half. And then came back out. And there was a whole presentation for him. And then there was a picture with him, Kareem, and a bozo that we want to talk about. Also on that front, can this just be done? Can we just not see that person anymore? I understand where the game was. There was no reason for him to be involved. There are other good players in Utah Jazz history. That should have never happened. Anyway. Where is the fun in something like that is where I get. Again, not expecting max effort, not even expecting like 75% effort. But like it was literally just I'm going to walk to the basket and
hey man, third quarter, Paul George had a deflection and Embiid had a chase down block.
It at 10% speed. Up some in the third. It did. That's true.
I mean, here's my thing. The first half, and I don't mean to cut you off. I'm going to just give you a slight break. The problem is they were at 5%. They were at shoot around. They were at walkthrough speed. That was pretty much the biggest issue. And they never really got out of that until the third, kind of. But then once they got to the target score, the game was already kind of toast to a degree.
Yes. I'm sorry to cut you off. That was also just bugging me. Because the effort was so bad, you can't even lead up to the Elam ending to bring the excitement at the end. Because by the time you got to the fourth, it was a double-digit lead. And the losing team did not have LeBron James anymore. So, like, even if you're going to go low effort, you can't have it to the point to where, okay, well, now we're just getting blown out because we just don't care.
I will be that guy. I will credit Jason Tatum for making a ton of threes in the third.
He did 27 points. That's
what I was saying. I was like, dang, that boy's not missing. And I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. Because I think Donovan Mitchell really wants to win this MVP, but Jason Tatum's not really cooperating. So how's this going to work out? And then while I was thinking that, the little Tatum Brown minigame ensued. And I was like, hey, if you like threes, there's like four sequences of people making insane shots. But again, if you don't like threes and you like supposed effort, like Luka had two drives that felt like he was just literally walking. I think Embiid had like four cuts where he's just standing there and got a dunk out of it. So it never got out of neutral. So I understand if that's the case. I mean, you may point to some roster construction on that one.
I mean, that's also part of it.
I mean, what team LeBron had Jokic and Embiid, which not ideal in this setting. And then you had Luka, who literally said, yo, I'm excited to go to Mexico. And Kyrie was just going to shoot threes or occasionally go get a layup. But then once he couldn't get the MVP, you lost that element too. I mean, it was almost funny. I mean, Team Giannis took 98 half-court shots and almost lost the game. There was like 30 seconds of fun there.
Almost lost the game as they won by 9.
Hey, man, it got down to like 6 or something like that, I feel like. I'm not a person who... The All-Star game needs to be fixed. The All-Star game is what it is. I'm sorry. I know no one likes to hear that. Sometimes you got to accept stuff where it is and see how you can tweak it. They're just taking a lot of threes. Like, we had a lot of those sequences. We just never got to the defense has to try portion of the proceedings. And then you combine that with just the overall slowness, I guess, and you get this. And sometimes you get a bad All-Star game.
And that's
they were very clear about this is safety first tonight. No one is getting hurt. We are all walking out of here and going on our vacations. You gotta remember, yes, the league expanded the All-Star break, but if you at All-Star, your break don't start until All-Star's over. So all of those folks are like, oh man, I'm trying to get out of here. Especially you got your teammates like, ha. How's your 19th interview and 12th sponsor meeting? Look at the sunshine.
That's true. And even on that front, LeBron didn't get in until Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, because he was not at media stuff on Saturday. Naturally, was not going to be there on Friday. And so he got in there. He played. He had the chase down. He got out of there, had the halftime presentation. And that was just kind of that. But
and I think we're missing Steph and KD.
Yeah.
I think you were missing just some of the, I don't want to say upper tier, but some of the people that can move it and make it more competitive. So even if it's not the same defensive thing, it's like, oh no, I'm trying to outscore you. Oh, no, yeah. I'm trying to outshoot you. And now it kind of just grows from there. It just felt like got some star power. Star power's hurt. Bunch of people just kind of happy to be here. Also kind of want to leave. It's cold.
It was very much a, when we played in that cold weather, it was cold energy during that All-Star game. And like, even with some of the star power missing, I guess that's where it goes to, I guess this old man yells at cloud adjacent to where it's like, okay, where does it kick in? Like, all right, I'm snatching the night then. If Tatum. Y'all ain't playing hard, that was it. And he won the thing. Set the All-Star game record for scoring. 27 in the third quarter. You mentioned Donovan Mitchell a little bit earlier. I think 40 points, 10 assists for him. But it just, it can't be 5%.
No, it can't be that slow. I would agree with that. And I think if you're able to get out of that speed they displayed at the start and just kind of rolled through, it looks different. It looks more like an All-Star game. So I'll get you that. But I don't know if we need to reinvent the wheel or have all these think pieces and takes about the All-Star game. Dog, this is for the kiddos and the league partners and the league. That game just happens to happen. You know what's funny, though? You mentioned trying to grab it. So Jason Tatum shot the ball 31 times.
They may have played
35 minutes.
Joe Mazzulla, man. That's
can we talk about that? This man played Drew Holiday 9 minutes and played his own guy 35. I mean, it's clear he wanted to get the first Kobe Bryant All-Star MVP. So salute to him for that. And you drop a 50 ball, hit 10 threes. That's great. Dame shot 21 times, 20 of those threes.
It's a hilarious stat line.
Jaylen Brown shot 27 times in 25 minutes. De'Aaron Fox, first All-Star appearance, did not score.
Can I wait? Because, like, I saw it when I looked at the box score after the game, and I just didn't say anything because I didn't want it to turn into a whole thing. Like, oh, he hates the King. Like, I don't. This was probably the worst defensive All-Star game ever. How do you not score a singular point in this game?
Because everyone else was shooting, but he was in.
Like, bro, get the inbound to go. You the fastest player out there. 0-for-1 for De'Aaron Fox. Who, shout out to De'Aaron for going back to like Saturday and the media stuff. Like, he's just a fun dude to talk to and a fun dude to hear talk to people. But he's genuinely one of the best personalities in the league. And he deserves more pub for that.
I feel you there. But shout out to Tyrese Halliburton getting as many shots up as Luka and Jokic combined. How did you like the live draft, by the way? What were your thoughts on it?
For like Twitter bit purposes, it was going too fast for me. I feel like I was on like pick 4 and they were like pick 7. I was like, all right, let me just get the names down. Then once we get that commercial break, let me fill in some stuff. But no, like I thought it was pretty cool. Like it was fun to watch them go back and forth. I thought it was going to be more of a back and forth, honestly. I thought we were going to get like some real jokes in into that front. With all due respect to one of the greatest players of all time and the all-time leading scorer and someone who's a lot of assists, a lot of championships, multiple MVPs, all defensive teams, all NBA teams, rookie of the year, Olympic gold medals, etc. How many times do you think he said Luka Doncic in the mirror and hit himself with the, I'm going to get him with this one?
Twice.
It, as someone that was in the arena, it did not hit the way that I think he anticipated that it would. But anyway, I do think the draft is like a fun ad. I was expecting more like banter. Also, well, this was going to be a free throw question. I guess I'll throw it out there. Why Jokic do Lauri Markkanen like that?
You think he did it on purpose?
I don't think he did it on purpose, but that's what made it extra funny.
And he did it to Lauri. And the funniest part is, it was all set up the reverse order so that if Lauri was the last person picked, it's in Utah, so it's fine. And Jokic still did that to him.
Like, no, we gonna let the record show. Lauri marketing over me? Like, nah, go ahead. You got a big fella.
Can we talk about Giannis accidentally drafting Ja and then pivoting to Shea?
One of them gonna drive.
Look, I want that. But okay, give me the other version.
Which, I mean, the other version's been better this year, but I feel that was pretty funny. Like, Giannis, you can't draft a starter during the reserve portion. Oh, can we? We haven't talked about that yet. Why were the reserves drafted first? That's very much rhetorical. Why were the reserves drafted first?
To flip it.
Their
feelings wouldn't be hurt.
There's no way feelings are going to get hurt here. Honestly, in light of in light of what the energy of that game was, I hope someone got their feelings hurt. We should have had the reserves go last. So then we could have had an anger angle and we would have got some juice in the freaking game. You know what? We need to reverse it for next year. That's what we need. Cause no, dog.
It was a good idea. Protect your young folks having their first experience. Get Lauri the hometown cheers at the end.
Oh no, boom. I'm only viewed as the 24th best player in the league.
Come on, guys. These are athletes we're talking about.
Put the ball in the hoop. Yeah, these are athletes we're talking about. Oh, you picked me last? I'm getting 30. Fun basketball game. Everybody wins. You get buckets. You prove Giannis or LeBron wrong. We all leave happy.
They all got buckets for the most part.
Yeah, De'Aaron didn't. Well,
oh God,
he went scoreless. I don't know what you want me to do.
Oh Lord,
I'm just.
All right, so you did not have a good time Sunday.
Just come on, man. This guy's got to be better than that. Coach Michael Malone called it the worst basketball game ever. Jaylen Brown said this isn't basketball.
One of y'all could have done something about
it. That was the other thing. and I even tweeted about that. I'm just like, I appreciate y'all being candid about this. However, the call is coming from inside the house.
Like, here's the thing. And this is what also used to spark all-star games. One dude going entirely too hard. All I needed was one person being like, nah, bet. Let me juice things up real quick. Dunk, steal, dunk. Wait a minute.
Hold on, I'll stop them then. And then it turns into a whole team effort and then you go. But.
Yeah, I just don't like the whole think pieces about it. Can we not do look at the defense played in the 1993 All-Star game clips? It's just fouls. Well, now you
to be fair,
y'all don't care. Y'all don't care about defense, man.
Well, I tell you what, I sure do, and I feel like it didn't have to be fouls, but like, dog, we didn't even get the fake slide in front of a ball handler to the third quarter. Like, what happened to okay? This dude come down the court. I'm gonna slide with him. He gets inside leverage at like the dotted line or whatever. And then he, you know, you let him go and then he gets the dunk or the layup or whatever. At least give us that. At least put in position to where like we can snap a picture and it looks like it was hard defense and it wasn't. You couldn't even get the photographers didn't have anything to work with.
No, yeah, they did a bad job protecting the game in that way. So hopefully they'll up that for next season. That way the optics won't be so bad. But also the screenshot of Jaylen Brown against Jason Tatum one-on-one with everyone watching, which was one of the more fun parts. Why are we sharing that? Like, it's the worst thing in the world. This is what the game has come down to. It's the teammates. They cleared out for like four times in a row. Like,
and it's so funny. If I wasn't like just annoyed, I would have tweeted that. I was like, one of the thoughts that I had Sunday was like, dang, at least give us like the Deion Waiters versus Tim Hardaway Jr. thing to where it turns into a fun one-on-one. Like, let's get some juice somewhere. And sure enough, we get Jason Tatum versus Jaylen Brown. And so, like, I was fine with that. I do think it's an indictment that was, like, pinnacle excitement in the game because it shouldn't have been. In an ideal all-star game, like, that's, like, fifth on the list. It's holy crap, this fourth quarter. It's holy crap, this dunk. It's holy crap, this sequence. Holy crap. Oh, also, we got teammates going at each other. That felt like the best moment of the game. And if that was the best moment of the game, that's a problem for your All-Star game. And so I was very disappointed. And like it brought me a little bit of, I guess, relief when I checked my timeline and I saw like that felt like the consensus. I was like, okay, cool. I'm not doing the Nikias overthinks being a nerd thing. I am not alone in feeling this way. That's cool. I didn't get to think piece. Like, I don't think it has to be a whole, like, I didn't think it was all that deep. I understand where the criticism comes from, because again, when the effort is that low, it opens yourself up to, okay, how much do these guys really care about basketball? How much do whatever, whatever. I think that's wrong, to be clear, but I at least see where that door was open based on the effort that was shown. And so that has to be avoided. And even with saying that, I'm also concerned because I don't want this to be the bar. If we have another low effort All-Star game next year, well, at least it was better than last year. And it's like, yeah, but the bar was like in a hole in the backyard. Like, we want good. We don't want just better than last year. And so I'm like preemptively annoyed about that, I guess. But
okay.
But yeah, that's, yeah. I thought we could have capped Sunday off a little bit better. But
okay. The hashtag is big mad, folks.
The hashtag was more big sad, honestly. It was just...
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
That's all right.
Got any food reviews for us from Utah?
chicken tenders, okay. You know? That's about the extent of my...
No, hold on. All right. You mean to tell me you was there for how many days and all you had was chicken tenders every day?
I did not have chicken tenders every day. However... Between the there was a pizza spot that I tried there that was like, I've had better pizza, but no, beyond that, like, I mostly just stuck to the old reliables, because like we had like some, they gave media like meal vouchers, so I was like, okay, if I'm at the game, I'll get here, and that's where the chicken tender thing comes in. But other than that, like in the hotel, there's like a breakfast spot, check the menu, it's like, okay, I don't really. Not really vibing with this, whatever. So again, it's like they
had. This man said he's never going back.
Hey, I didn't say that. Come on now.
Felt it in my soul a little bit. It's okay though.
Oh no, no.
Again, I had a couple requests real quick before we get to free throws. I'm not sure if you had any. Request number one: did you get a haircut in Utah?
Nope. I got my haircut before I got
you pre-planning. Question number two, were you body rolling during that halftime performance?
No, but respectfully, halftime show was good. Shout out Tim's. Halftime show was good.
Okay. All right. Do you have free throws?
I do have a few for you.
I only have a handful, so I'll throw mine out there real quick.
Okay.
Start bench cut. Phone, laptop, or video game console?
Man, for someone that was like around multiple players and stuff as that question was being asked, I was like, you know, I wonder if this is for a story or a video. But much like literally everyone, I will start my phone. start the phone. I probably bench the video game console. And then I go with the laptop last. Because ultimately... For people that know my story, like, I started writing, like, I was writing articles on my phone. So, like, that's not going to prevent me from doing work. But I can download Zoom. I can do basically everything I need to from my phone. So, like, I don't need the laptop. The PS5, though, like, I don't... Hey, man.
You can give me one of them.
Such a bad bit. Continue.
Better idea, the 3D printed ball or the NFT?
I guess the 3D printed ball, like, at least that was real. Yeah, that's just kind of, yeah. Shout out KJ Barton. Gonna be lost in history. He had a good content.
Setting a three-point contest record in the first round and not winning, or losing in the first round of the three-point contest and then hitting 10 threes in the All-Star game? Which do you choose?
Well, shooting that All-Star game doesn't count. Like, give me the record in the first round, and then you lose to another elite shooter, fine.
Okay, that's all I have.
Okay. All right, well, I have a few one. What percentage of the crowd do you think rock with the halftime show?
All-Star game?
Yeah.
25.
Okay. Asked it earlier, but I'll once again drop it into free throws. Why did Jokic do Laurie like that? I got a good laugh out of that one.
That man was not paying attention. That man just figured, I'm going to be last. Ain't nobody around me. I guess it's my turn. And forgot Laurie was there. Do the Jazz and Nuggets play again is the big question.
Yeah, that's good. Look that up on the schedule. Did you know that Lauri Markkanen could dunk like that?
No. Yeah. He has continued to surprise me over the last 2 to 3 years, so I again apologize to him.
There we go. What do we see first? Zion Williamson in the dunk contest or Julius Randle in the three-point contest again?
Yeah, you got better odds of Julius in the three-point contest again, man.
That's tough. Last one for me. What does the league need more? A shorter schedule or KD reaching third all time in scoring?
Kevin Durant.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Please join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you have the capabilities. We are having fun discussions in there. Join the Dunker Spot watch parties. We are really going to get creative for the next few days before NBA games are back. So maybe some YouTube things, maybe some gaming streams. Who's to say? Hop in there. I will put the link in the description. If it's not hyperlinked on the app that you're listening to, just copy and paste it into your browser. Get yourself logged in. Very easy to do. It's free. Don't do, you know. None of that funny business. Come watch some stuff with us. We have fun when basketball games are on. We're breaking down things. We are laughing at things that are posted in the chat. Analysis and antics is the tagline there. So come rock with us. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
Boy, these games need to come back soon.